Welcome back to the Succeed in Medicine podcast. I'm your host, Brad Block. This will be a solo episode where it's just me talking, and I hope you enjoy it because it will be my swan song. This is my last episode. So I just want to thank everybody who's been with me for this journey of 7.5 years and 500 episodes. I've learned a ton. I've grown a ton. I think I owe you all an explanation of why I'm leaving. And it gets back to the theme of the episode, which is succeeding in medicine and how we define success. I'm not pausing it because it wasn't successful, though I was always trying to find ways to increase my visibility and get more downloads. The reason I'm leaving is because I was elected to the board of my practice. And my practice has almost 300 physicians. We're a huge employer. I'm responsible for, really, I'm one of 7 elected board members that helped to navigate this giant practice, and I take that responsibility very seriously. And I found myself in positions where I would have some free time, and I had to decide how I was going to spend that free time. Am I going to do it on stuff for the practice, for my podcast, for the podcast network? And because it's such a huge responsibility, I've decided, even though I put so much time and effort into building this podcast and podcast network, to me, it was the board and the practice, no question. And so I have to pause it. And I don't know if I'm ever going to go back. I don't know if I'm going to go back to recording episodes. But ultimately, the way I see it is the podcast was successful in what I wanted it to be. When I first started it, I had questions and I wanted experts to answer them. I had questions about how I could be a better doctor, how I could be a better communicator, how I could be a better leader. And I got those questions answered. And now I'm in a position to utilize all that I've learned from those conversations and apply it to my position at the board. And I wouldn't feel comfortable. I wouldn't have felt comfortable being in the position that I am had it not been for my podcasting journey. And if you all are interested in the same thing, I would strongly encourage you to start a podcast and the podcast network that I'm no longer a part of. So there's no conflict of interest here. You can find them at drpodcastnetwork.co. And you should really consider starting your own. Because if you're the type of person to listen to this, you're the type of person that wants to do better and be better. And this is a great tool for doing that. Interestingly, I was asked by my alma mater, Georgetown, to come speak to them. They have this at a Grand Rounds. They have this research day. And last year was the first year where they had an alumnus come speak on their research day and give a talk. And they said, Brad, you're doing interesting things with the podcast. We want you to come talk to us about that. And so I put together a talk about podcasting. But ultimately, it wasn't just about podcasting. It was about what I've learned from podcasting and succeeding in medicine and how we define success. And so I'm going to give you some version of that talk today. Why start a podcast, what I've learned, and how we define success. And I'll give away the ending now. Success is having the ability to do what you want to do and find fulfilling in the way that you want to do. Now, we all have to work within certain confines, but being able to spend your time in a way that you find meaningful and fulfilling is success. That's going to change throughout your career. And it's changed throughout mine. And I'm going to show you all the different ways that I tried to find and define success, right? And so first, the conflict of interest here, I have to disclose, because in Grand Rounds, you have to disclose something. There's a conflict of interest with my practice because I really want you to join my practice if you're an otolaryngologist or an allergist. I think we're amazing, right? We have a clear path to full equity partnership, which means if you join our practice and you do the things that you're supposed to do that we clearly define when you're signing your contract, you can be a partner and have the same equity as me, one of the board members, and have the same equity as one of the founding members. We still have a couple of them still practicing. And we're one of the few, you may even be in the only place that has that type of thing. But now you're going to be partner in name only where they're going to own all the equity and you get some bump in income. No. You get a seat at the table, you get a vote, and you get equity, and then you can become a voting member that decides where this practice is going. So that's my only disclosure as of this point. Okay, so we're going to talk about a couple of things. We're going to talk about what is a podcast, but that's what I'm going to be talking about, my grand. What is a podcast? Why start one? How to start one? What I've learned in my journey, my career journey, and then we're going to keep coming back to this idea of success. So first, the question is, why did I start what was originally Physician's Guide to Doctoring and then became Succeed in Medicine. But it's called Physician's Guide to Doctoring because I wanted SEO. If you typed in physician or doctor, I wanted to pop up. Turns out, not the most compelling title, but there I was. And I started it because I was not the fastest person with my patients, right? I would take a very long time with each patient. And I found that at the end of the day, I was really far behind and it would take me forever to get home. And that was a big rate limiting step that I felt like I needed work on. And so how did I get people in front of me to be able to answer those questions? You can't just call up a stranger who wrote a book on communication and say, I've got questions for you. Podcast. You can call them up and say, hey, I've got a podcast. And one of my coolest experiences early on, I think this was somewhere in the 20s. There was an article in the Huffington Post about how terrible doctors are about talking to their patients about their weight. So I called up one of the psychologists who was quoted in the article. And I said, that article was all about how we're terrible at it. How can we be better at it? And she said, I love podcasts. That's so cool. I'd love to talk about it. Not that she'd ever heard of mine. I only had a couple of episodes. And then I got to ask her all these questions about how we can be better about talking to our patients about their weight. What a great, amazing experience. And then I kept going from there and I kept on asking more and more questions. And actually from the beginning, I didn't start with communication because I didn't have a podcast. So in order to have a couple of episodes under my belt, I contacted my network. As physicians, our network is full of experts. Our friends from college, our friends from high school, these people are all captains of industry, or many of them are captains of industry, and we can ask them questions. So I started with my immediate network. Actually, one of them is Jennifer Tassler. She's a lawyer. She's married to one of my co-residents, and we talked about physician advocacy because that's one of her areas. I had my brother on. He has a PhD in health policy economics. So I talked about what people get wrong about the Affordable Care Act. And then I called up my good friend, Danielle Marino, who's at the time, maybe still is the fellowship director of gastroenterology at University of Rochester. We talked about what you would want every physician to know about what GI doctors know and what they do. So that's how I started. And then the titles and the topics just exploded from there and really gave some idea of what was going on in my life because of those are the questions that I had. So if you're looking to get started on a podcast, the first thing that's going to happen is analysis paralysis. What mic do I buy? What service do I use? And the answer is, for most of the stuff, it really doesn't matter. Every podcaster is going to tell you the same thing. And it's just get started. Just make your first stinky episode. And if you need to buy a different mic, if you need to buy a different camera, if you want to use a different website, you will figure that out. But what the mistake that every podcaster makes is we don't get started. So just answer those questions. What is the bare bones that you need to start recording and then record? The other thing that's really important is, as a physician, your time is really valuable. And so outsource. Anything that you can outsource to someone else. I've never edited a single episode. Never. And I never will, clearly. So outsource as much as you can. Some people really enjoy that. I didn't, clearly. And so I found people to do that for me. And so again, that's not to plug the network again, but I'm going to plug the network again because they deserve it. DrPodcastNetwork.co. They help physicians podcast. Okay. And then leveraging my network of experts, right? And so ultimately, what was the show about? Really, it just came about, the topics were all things where I had questions and I wanted answers, okay? And it didn't matter how many downloads I got, because as long as I was getting my questions answered and I was enjoying it and growing from it and finding it fulfilling, it was successful. And that's what I kept coming back to. And many times throughout the podcast's life, I tried to find ways to grow the show, right? To grow it and turn it into a business. Because at some point, it wasn't good enough just to enjoy it and learn from it. I wanted it to grow. And so I hired a fancy editor who thought they could help me grow. I took a course to find ways for it to grow. I started doing 2 episodes a week. I got guest hosts so I could leverage their networks in all these different ways. Some of the things worked, some of them didn't. Some of them worked for a little while. But ultimately, it all came back to I kept doing it because I enjoyed it. Also, there's something inside of me that just wouldn't let me quit, right? Until I made it something, because I would have thought of myself as a failure. So that's my own pathology going on. But ultimately, the success was the show itself. And if you are creating a podcast or doing some activity that is similar to this, if you want to grow yourself on social media, you got to always remember what your why is. And as long as what you're doing is consistent with that why, it will be successful in some measurable way because you will find it fulfilling, right? Is it worth your time? These are other questions that go into it, but ultimately you can never lose sight of your why. It can't be the show for the show's sake, but rather for your sake. And as you're doing these different ventures, how do you define success? What is success? Success, is it having a big show with lots of listeners and sponsorship? Yeah, that's one definition of success. Would have been pretty awesome if I ever accomplished that. But ultimately, whatever endeavor that you're doing, if you really want to be the chairperson of a department, that's going to depend on other people's behaviors too, right? But if your goal is to be chairperson, why is that your goal, right? Because of the title, because of the accolades, because of other people, or because it's going to enable you to do certain things in that position that you can't do in other positions, right? Think about your why. And then you can define your path to success by saying, what are the things that I need to do in order to become a chairperson? Fine, that's one way of doing it. Or the other way of doing it is, why do I want to become that person? Why do I want to have that position? Is it because I love teaching? Is it because I love meetings? Is it because I love admin stuff? Is it because, right? What is the stuff about it that you're really going to like? And then find ways to do that stuff now. Or find ways to put yourself in a position to be able to do that stuff now. Because then you're already successful. And then maybe it will take you to that path. Or who knows, maybe it'll take you somewhere else. And you're going to see that is what happened to me in my career. As soon as I joined ENT and Allergy Associates, I was living in Manhattan at the time. I was single. I had a bunch of time on my hands. And so I would go to the board meetings. There weren't many people that would go. It was up in Westchester, New York. It was a bit of a drive away and a bit of a pain in the butt to get there. But I would show my face because I wanted to know this was a big practice. At the time, we were half the size that we were now when I first joined. But I knew we were something important. And I knew I wanted to be a part of that. And I didn't know how, maybe a board seat someday, but I just wanted to be a part in some way. And so I showed my face. Then they, in showing my face, they said, you know what? This guy's really interested. We want him to run the audiology committee. Run the audiology committee? I'm not an otologist. You know, we have ear subspecialists out there. I'm a generalist. What do I know? What do I know about management? But they said, you know what? He's interested. We're going to cultivate that. And so they put me on the committee as a co-chair. I eventually became chair of the committee. And we did many great things for the practice in that position. And it gave me more comfortable with the structure of the company and leadership. And it put me out there. And it put me towards this position of being on the board. And do what you're interested in the capacity that you can do it at this point, not because you have some endpoint goal in mind, because that's going to depend on other people. But finding ways to spend your time in ways that you find meaningful now. That's success. Okay, so what are some of the other topics that I talked about on my show, right? Like I said, it followed the arc of my life. And I was answering the question, everything we should have been learning while we were memorizing Krebs cycle. So I talked about communication, financial planning, right? I met all these internet personalities that talked about money, and I didn't know that much about money. So we talked about financial planning. We talked about burnout, mostly because that's what everybody else wanted to talk about. Everybody is an expert on burnout and wants to talk about burnout. So we did some shows on that. I got sued a couple of times. So we talked about what it's like getting sued. Oh, and then I had a couple of kids, because when I started the show, I had two and now I have three. And so I didn't want to screw up my kids. And so I had a couple of shows on parenting and being a good spouse and being a good partner and being a good leader and being a good friend. I had an episode on making friends, why it's hard to make friends as an adult. And so I wanted a show on, especially for physicians, right? You take a job in a new city where you don't know anyone. How do you make friends, right? We talked about side hustles and all the different side hustles that physicians have out there. And I even involved myself in a couple of the side hustles. We'll talk about that. We talked about combating misinformation, because that came as being a part of this physician online community, especially with COVID. I saw all this misinformation out there, and I feel like it's our responsibility to push back against that. And so what did I do? I did some episodes on combating misinformation, and then the business of medicine, right? I had quite a few episodes on that. And so some of them would be pitched to me by people, and sometimes it would just be the arc of my own life and interest and career. That's most of what it was. Again, because the show was self-serving. It was to help me be a better version of myself, and hoping that in doing so, the listeners could see something and hear something and be better versions of yourselves. And so one of the big takeaways from communication that I have, and actually it came from one of my guests and guest hosts, Scott Abramson, that loves to talk about this particular thing. And he's really a sterler person to talk about it. Something he said was really insightful, and it helped me reflect on communicating with my patients, which is, what's the point of communicating with our patients. And everyone says the same thing. It's all in the history. It's to get a good history from your patients so they can, you can figure out the diagnosis and treatment. Yes, yes. But you do this long enough and you can find that out pretty quickly, right? What's the other purpose of communicating with patients? And this is also going to make sense in situations where you have the diagnosis when the patient walks in, right? You're someone that other physicians refer to. You're an oncologist. You have the diagnosis when the patient walked through the door. And so then what's the purpose of communication with our patients? A lot of the purpose is trust building, right? So once you recognize that, you can utilize communication in a different way. Trust building, getting the patient to trust that I understand their symptoms. I understand what they're going through. I understand what's important to them. Obviously, you have to talk to them to find out those things, but it's to let them know that you care about all of those things. You care about them as more than the sum of their symptoms, so that they can trust you in your recommendation. And the moment you start investing some of your communication in trust, it will pay off. One, because the job gets more enjoyable. And two, because those visits often get shorter, right? And then you don't get stressed out like I do. I've got four people in my waiting room. That to me is stressful, right? And that takes away from the attention of the patient in front of you. So I can be, if I can be a little more efficient in my communication because I've built that trust up front, then it's more enjoyable for me, more fulfilling, better for the patient, really better for everyone. And so what are the couple of ways that we can build trust quickly? Okay, one would be take a breath before you go in that room to reset yourself. Remember who you are, what you're doing, why you're doing it, and that the patient is the star of the show. Take a breath to reset yourself. Two, enter with positive energy. Enter with a little bit of enthusiasm, right? That positive energy is going to help them recognize that you are interested in them. You are excited to see them. Excited to clearly temper that energy appropriately depending on what you're seeing them for, but certainly coming in with a morose affect is going to affect the temperature of the room and how this goes. Next, introduce yourself. Hi, my name is Brad Block. You can call me Dr. Brad. Or you can call me Dr. Block. How would you like me to refer to you? And then introduce yourself to everyone else in the room. Who are they, right? How are they related to the patient? Don't make any assumptions. And then thank them for coming. Thank you so much for coming. Thank you so much for being here with your significant other or cousin, whoever you gave the ride to, right? You're the ride person. Thank you for giving them a ride and being a part of the healthcare team, right? These things, they seem small, they seem superficial, but they're really important. Another thing that that can really help you to build this trust is to really look at them in the eye, not a creepy way, right? But really be on eye level, make eye contact long enough that you notice their eye color. And if you do that, then you can check it off your list. Now you know you did it. You did it in such a way that they know that you recognize them and you're not just hiding behind your computer, typing away. I know we are data entry professionals. We are not just medical professionals. We are, hopefully AI will take a lot of this off our plate, but you do have to enter the data, but it does affect the visit when you are not making contact with them. So try to be as present as possible for as long as you can and really look them in the eye. Other things you can do is observe any details about them that help you to humanize them, right? They've got a Jets sweatshirt on. And hey, how do you think they're going to do this season? I don't follow football. That doesn't matter to me, but clearly it matters to them, or it may. So it's a good way to just break the ice, help to show them that you care about more than just the sum of their symptoms, right? Another tip is listening for emotion. Listening for emotion and acknowledging that emotion. Oh, that sounds so worrisome. Now, the guest said to me that when we talked about this particular, he said to me, actually, you should phrase it more from their perspective. You were worried. For me, that never really rolls off the tongue. I like to say that sounds really worrisome, acknowledging that that's not taking his advice. So you find a way that works for you. So acknowledging, listening for emotion, acknowledging that emotion. And I apologize, I did this in a little wrong order. As soon as you walk in the room, before you ask them about their history, acknowledge whatever information given to you by whoever put them in the room. Oh, so-and-so said you're here to talk to me about your sore throat. That tells them that we communicated, because people hate it when they just gave someone 20 minutes of their history and it seems like we didn't communicate. So even something small as that signals to them that there was some information exchange. And the last one is ask them, so tell me from the beginning. I love that because patients often give their history in order of importance or severity, but not in order, chronological order. But that's how we need to hear it and process it. So tell me from the beginning. Another thing that can help is nonverbal, paying attention to your nonverbal cues, your own nonverbal cues, right? What patients are reading from the room. And so nonverbal communication can really be broken down into the fact that we as physicians need to communicate two things: interest and authority. We're interested in what they have to say and who they are, and we have the authority, we're the experts that can help them. Another way to phrase that would be strength and warmth. So authority and interest, or strength and warmth. We need to exude strength because we know how to help them, and warmth because we care about them. Interest is generally conveyed through facial expressions. So make sure that your face is moving, right? You don't need to be dramatic about it. But certainly if you're stone-faced because you're thinking real hard and taking notes, you're not conveying what you think you may be conveying. You're conveying a lack of interest. So make sure your face is doing something, move your brows a little bit, something so that they know that you care and you're interested in what you have to say, right? Authority is generally demonstrated through vocal tonality. And so using your voice in a way that demonstrates authority, right? Make sure you're projecting. Make sure you don't have glottic fry, which would be talking like this. I call it the Kardashian voice because it sounds like that, right? So using some strength in your voice, ending on like with more staccato to your voice instead of ending on a question, right? That doesn't exude authority. So make sure you're using your voice to exude authority and your face to demonstrate interest. So interest and authority, or warmth and strength, right? That's what you want to make sure that you are communicating. And last, with nonverbal communication, make sure that you recognize that there's some theater in medicine, right? One of my guests used the example of he had a mole in his arm. He was really worried about it. He thought he might have skin cancer. And the doctor walked in the room. He could see from a mile away that it was a seborrheic keratosis, which is totally benign. We don't worry about it. He said, no, that's nothing. Don't worry about it. And he left, right? You can blow through your visits that way, but that's not really what the patient needs from you. So he got a second opinion from another doctor who took out a little microscope, palpated it, even opened a book. We can use Google at this point to show him what it was, right? A couple extra minutes meant the world to that patient. So there is the same diagnosis, very dramatically different outcome from the patient's experience, from the patient's perspective. So recognize that there is a little bit of theater in medicine. You have to recognize that what is being asked of you aside from just diagnosis and treatment. And I've talked about this already in terms of active listening, but being present, right? That means you're completely undistracted. Yeah, we're told all the time in medicine, listen, you're not listening, you're not listening. But being present means you're completely undistracted in mind and body. So there needs to be times during the visit where you are 100% present with that patient, right? When you hear about people who are ultra charismatic, what you hear is, when I talk to them, I feel like I'm the only person in the universe. That's what your patient deserves from you. You might not be able to do it the whole visit because, yes, we are required to do data entry. But there needs to be some point in the visit where you are 100% present in mind and body with that patient. Again, I mentioned validating their emotions, don't just listen for information, listen for emotions and reflect that back to them. And last thing, we're often criticized as physicians for interrupting. And so interruption is okay. Interruption is important to facilitate the story. That's when it's okay, right? It's because you're listening and you're noticing some contradictions, or you're noticing that they're saying it in a way that you are not going to be able to process it. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I process information best in chronological order and you're skipping all around. So can we go back to the beginning? Because I'm still there and you skipped ahead. Or listen, I really want to make the most out of our time together. So I just need you to take a step back to this point in the story because it's really important for me to understand what was happening there. So interruption is okay as long as you are doing it to facilitate them being a better storyteller. So that's a lot of the stuff that I learned from communication. And maybe someday I'll write a book about it. And I had a couple of episodes on burnout. Like I said, I was the head of the audiology committee of my practice that was occupying some time. I was also on the compliance committee, where we review people's charts, make sure that they're billing and coding appropriately so we can teach them how to do that better. I had 3 children in fewer than 3.5 years. And COVID hit. And so with all that together, and then the podcast, right? And, you know, my other side gigs that I'll talk about in a bit, with all that together, I was burned out. And as it turned out, I wasn't as burned out as I thought it was. As it turns out, it was mostly just sleep deprivation from having 3 kids in 3.5 years. And so once I started getting some more sleep, my mental health dramatically improved. So in retrospect, it wasn't really burnout. It was just lack of sleep and overwhelm, right? And what did I do? I paused everything. I quit the compliance committee. I quit the audiology committee. I paused podcasting for a bit. And as one of my guests, she's a physician coach as well. Her name is Dr. Megan Mello. She said, she made the excellent point. There are always more opportunities. There will always be more opportunities. If it's the perfect opportunity, but it's not the right time, you may want to reconsider taking that opportunity. Because we're physicians and we put ourselves in positions where there are lots of opportunities. So it needs to be the right opportunity at the right time. And the saying that's commonly quoted is, say either hell yes or no. So I quit everything. The problem is I have this bad habit of adding things to my plate. So I will clear my plate and then start, go back to the buffet and start adding things. And so what did I start adding? I wasn't successful because I didn't have all these things that I see people online doing. Being a physician, successful physician with three beautiful kids and a great marriage was not enough for me. So I needed to find other ways to define my success. So I started doing expert witness work. And you can hear I have a lot of episodes on expert witness work. We started the podcast network. We bought an Airbnb. So all of these side hustles I started adding to my plate, right? Some were fulfilling, some were not. The Airbnb, we have one Airbnb. We love it. It's a great, my wife is the one who runs it. And it was really a fun thing for us to do together. There are all these physicians out there that do real estate. And I looked into real estate, but man, multifamily, apartment buildings, storage, I just couldn't get excited about it. A vacation home, that we could get excited about. So we did it. We bought it. We barely spent any time there per IRS rules. That's our investment property. If you spend more time there, it has to be, then it would be classified as a vacation home. That's an aside. That was successful. The podcast network, we were doing well. It's still in the process of ramping up. But again, and then expert witness work, all these side hustles in pursuit of success, because they still didn't know what success was or what it looked like, but I saw other people doing it. So I was trying to emulate them. And so I still didn't have a handle on what success was or what I wanted to do or how I wanted to spend my time. These were all these side pursuits, and I was hoping that something would just click and happen and become successful. But then I had a couple other things that I was passionate about. ENT and allergy, we were approached by private equity. And so I spent a lot of time getting to know, I wasn't in a leadership position at that point, but I spent a lot of time getting to know my partners that were around my age to find out what was important to them, what they were worried about, what maybe we could exert some control over. Little did I know, in reaching out to all those people, that was my first step towards my board position, because that made me a lot more visible. A lot of people got to know who I was because I put a lot of effort into just finding out for myself what this was all about and what people were worried about. What should I be worried about? That never came to fruition, but it was my first foray into really real leadership in my practice. And then another thing happened in my practice. I started the patient experience committee. We had never had one before. Other practices have these things. And so I felt it was really, really important. And then, and that's evolved over time. But one of the things that happens in that position is our physicians get reviewed by our patients. And they get scored. And so there's a question of, what do we do for people that score on the lower end? And one of the people who listens to this show, actually, who's now the medical director of our practice, Jay Chikara, who's listened to my episode, he goes, hey, wait a second. Didn't you have an episode on that? In that, how to talk to people who don't score well on stuff like that? Yeah, I had an episode on that from 5 years ago. So I listened to the episode. It was great. And it helped me inform me on what I should do in this patient experience committee to in how to talk to physicians who don't score that well with their patients and how to help them. I've had a lot of episodes on physician wellness, and now actually I'm the head of the physician wellness committee as well for my practice. So I'm on the board, I'm the chair of the patient experience committee, I'm the chair of the physician wellness committee. And a lot of that just came from, again, questions that I had in my previous position in the practice of just being a rank and file physician, but I was looking to learn ways that we could be better. And now I'm in a position that I can really help to make that happen. How can we do better? How can we be better? Listen, I love my practice, but we can all be better and we can all do better, right? And so it turns out that the success that I was looking for in all these side gigs, this circuitous journey has landed me in a place where it is clearly, I am clearly successful because I was elected to this position. And now I can parlay all of that knowledge into this position. Now, had I not been elected, I could still be an active member of those committees, and I could still use that experience to help my practice be better, and I would have enjoyed it, and it would have helped my practice, and it would have been fulfilling for me, but it wouldn't have been as time commitment. So then I probably would have stayed with the podcast. And then who knows where that could have taken us. And ultimately, it gets back to what is success? And success is, again, spending time in a way that you find meaningful and fulfilling. And this is going to change just as it changed throughout my career. It's going to change throughout your career. And again, back to that person who wants to be a chairperson, there's the arrival fallacy. I will be successful when? I will be successful when I'm a chairperson. I'll be successful. No, you'll be successful when you can start appreciating what you have and always trying to push yourself and always trying to do better. Certainly. But again, finding ways to spend your time now, not so that you can get to some position that's going to require things to go a certain way. Maybe it'll take you there, or maybe it'll take you somewhere else. Who knows, right? The podcast took me to this position where I'm on the board of my practice. That's not why I did it. That's not why what I expected to happen with it, but that's where I am. In medicine, we always have this arrival fallacy. I'll be successful when this happens. Once I finish residency, once I finish fellowship, once I became partner, once I. But no, success is spending your time with intention, consistent with your values, and aligned with your purpose. I'm going to say it again. Success is spending your time with intention, consistent with your values, and aligned with your purpose. Now, a successful life doesn't mean that you're not doing things that you don't want to do, right? And I'm going to quote one of my guests. That he's an expert in ADHD, and I had him on the show to help us all be a little more organized. And he said, part of the cost of a good life is sometimes doing things you hate. Okay? Again, I'm going to say that again. Part of the cost of a good life is sometimes doing things you hate. Or said a different way, Tim Ferriss, who I used to read some of his stuff, listen to some of his stuff. He's got some fringe ideas, but he did say one thing that I really appreciate, so it bears repeating, and that's, a person's success in life can usually be measured by the number of uncomfortable conversations he or she is willing to have. So again, success doesn't mean only doing things you like. Spending your time getting rid of mundane things that you don't find fulfilling is a different story. But uncomfortable conversations, doing uncomfortable things, it doesn't mean that's going to evaporate. So get that out of your head now. But I'll say it one more time. Success is spending your time with intention, consistent with your values, and aligned with your purpose. So how do you find your purpose? So again, I'm quoting another one of my guests, Dr. Jordan Grummet, Doc G. He's written a couple of amazing books, life-changing books that everyone should read on finding your purpose, on knowing how to spend your time and your money, because he's a financial expert, how to spend your time and money with intention. And that's, purpose isn't a goal. It's the process that lights you up and asks you to grow. So again, becoming department chair is not your purpose. It's the meaningful acts that are becoming of a department chair so that you can get to that position. Who knows? Maybe you'll ask to do other things. Maybe you'll end up in a different position, one of different leadership. But it's the process that lights you up and asks you to grow. What do you want to spend your time doing? How can I do that now? Another great quote from Jordan. When we intentionally engage in deeply meaningful activities, we find people with the same calling. These people become our community. So this is taking the talk in a little bit of a different direction, and I don't want to do that, but I do think it bears mentioning in that humans need other humans. We are tribal animals. We are pack animals, and we need other people. And so it's really important that we do spend our time with people that are important to us. And part of finding your purpose and part of finding your goals and establishing them and establishing how you define success is that you can then, you end up as a side effect of finding people like you, finding people that share your values, finding your community, right? And then you get to do those things with those people because the best predictor of health and longevity and happiness, the strength of your social connections. So finding your purpose, finding what lights you up, and then spending time doing that will help you find that community. And so my success started off as the host of The Physician's Guide to Doctoring, grew the show, had great conversations, eventually became Succeed in Medicine, started the Doctor Podcast Network, did some expert witness work, went to some interesting conferences, met some interesting people, bought an Airbnb, and then became board member of the biggest ENT practice in the country. Now, I've decided again to step away from the podcast and the podcast network so I can focus on my position on the board. And in 3 years, I have to be reelected. If I'm not reelected, was I successful? I say, it depends on how I spent my time in that position. Do I get to look around and say, I accomplished these things. I spent my time in a meaningful way. You know what? There might be someone who's more suited for the position than me. Great. Let that person do it. How am I going to spend my time? You know what? Clearly, I don't have a problem filling my time. And maybe then I'll write the book. Maybe then I'll go back to the podcast. Who knows? Or maybe I'll get reelected because I'll have done such a good job, right? And how do you define success? How am I defining success? Spending my time with intention, consistent with my values, and aligned with my purpose. Making my practice the best practice that I can make it. Doing what I'm good at. And I hope you all can find the same success. And thank you so much for listening to the show. It meant the world to me. And again, if you're interested in starting your own podcast and doing the same, go to drpodcastnetwork.co and they can help you out. Great people, great network. We're a physician's podcast.